Hello, everyone.
Welcome to Golden Girls 911 Stories. I'm Trudy Henry, and I'm so excited to be here.
I'm Anessa Westmoreland. I'm excited to be here, too. Join us as we talk about our experience as dispatchers, working in public safety, and so much more.
Feel free to subscribe to the Golden Girls 911 Stories wherever you listen to podcasts. Enjoy this episode.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to our first episode of Golden Girls 911 Stories. Hope you enjoy what we have to say and share with you today. I'm Trudy Henry. I'm the 911 Director at the Covington-Newton County 911 Center.
And I'm Anessa Westmoreland, the Operations Manager.
I feel like this is all me.
I would just start out with your names.
I feel like I'm so far away. I hate these chairs.
Well, we can switch chairs.
Well, no, there's no other chair that's good. I can tell.
So we just want to like start out by saying welcome. Do we welcome to the Golden Girls?
Yeah.
Or then.
Yeah. I will not. Now I feel like it's too close. Too close, too far. Do this, do that.
So that's how I feel. I feel like I'm too close and I feel like I'm too far away.
I do like this better up here because before I was just like.
Yeah, this like just feels weird. A lot better already. Yeah. We got to bring the energy. Don't forget.
I got the energy.
Yeah, we gotta pack in the energy.
I can get the energy. I just need the words.
They're already in there. They're all in there.
The words to go with the energy. So is this where we're going to talk about, are we going to introduce ourselves? Talking about like, you know, I've been here for 27 years. Almost 27 years. Next month will be 27 years. I started when I was a wee little girl with my teens.
There you go. I just made sure.
I was 19.
Yeah. And if you want to talk about why we are here together, it's because we worked in this little tin building.
Well, see, and I told Lynn a story last night about all of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was me.
See,
and Suzanne.
I would like to get Suzanne and Christy on it. I think we should talk about how it was when we first started. And how close we were. And then I think, like, on a future episode, if we could get them both in here, even if we can't get Christy, we could call. Maybe she could call in or something. And I just think it would be fun. Because I feel like, especially after having... This is what I was thinking the other day. I didn't want to highlight this, you know, the deputy getting shot or whatever. But since that day, all I can think about is you work... During these stressful times with people, I'm gonna cry.
What's wrong with you lately?
No.
But you make friends with these people who are your friend forever because you're in these stressful times. It's just, I don't know.
Oh my God. See, that's just feeling that I'm not feeling today.
But, I mean, I just think that that's what makes it special, is that we're not out there, but we still feel everything that they do.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what's going on. I broke into this.
I'm kind of in here somewhere.
I don't want to cry on the back. I gotta get it out.
I don't want you to.
But I just feel like, I mean, I think just being there the other night and just, you know, when I sent that email and I told him, you know, we've worked in these situations before. Yeah, we didn't work when an officer was shot but they were shot at, and just going through those times and just thinking that the people you had next to you is what helped get you through it, you know, and just... having those strong bonds and making these friends that we made, you know, here we are in the 90s sitting there in that little tin building, and we joke and say when we get old, we're going to be the Golden Girls. Well, now we're old. And we are the Golden Girls. And so I just feel like it's like a circle coming back around. So I just think that I think that's what makes it special, is that every person over the 20-something years that I've worked with, you know, I mean, I made these relationships then, even with the deputies and the officers and fire, not really a myth, but, you know, fire, making those relationships that you know that you've made along the way, and those ones that were working when certain things happen, you have that bond with them forever.
Are you recording all this? You should be recording this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's one of those things that I just feel like it all started in that little 900 square feet.
No, it's in a 20 by 20 room.
That's what I'm saying. We're right on top of each other.
With the bathroom right next to us.
Yes.
We did, and we formed friendships that, I mean, not only have been tested through working, but, I mean, even in our personal lives, we've all mm-hmm. had tragedy, and we've all had, mm-hmm. you know, things where, I mean, the first people that were there were not my friends that I had outside of work, but my friends that I had sat in that building with mm-hmm. that knew me better than anybody else.
Yeah, because it's a family. Because I think, like I said, it makes you stronger because you sit there during the most difficult times. And just like police officers, I'm sure fire and EMS, that you feel like other people don't understand unless you've been through it. Well, when you've been through it, you're going to go to the person that was either went through it with you or has been through it also, that you have worked together. So I just feel like you have these common bonds just from going through these experiences and being there, even if it's just working 3 months without having a day off, you know, working overtime and just being there together and just showing up every day.
Or celebrating your birthday with just those people because you weren't able to be at home.
Yeah.
Because of overtime.
Or Christmas. Or being together, you know, celebrating Christmas or Thanksgiving, you know, when you're at work. You know, but it means, yes, you'll go home and you'll probably have it with your other family, but this is your family too.
I didn't know we were going deep.
We did. We went real deep.
We went really deep.
She'll probably have to move that.
I thought that was really good.
So why do you want to be a dispatcher?
Why did I want to be a dispatcher? Uh-huh. I didn't want to be a dispatcher.
Well, how did you end up as a dispatcher?
So back in 1994, I had graduated from college from high school the year before, and I went to college for a little bit, and it just wasn't the time for me to get my education. Yeah. And so I came home, and I was, you know, faced with some choices of I had to get a job and, you know, support myself because that's what you do, I guess. So I applied at the 911 center, and I got the job, and I was put on morning watch, and I, you know, didn't like the idea of working at night at first, and it was not in my plan. I never wanted to, never had a desire to do it. So I applied, and I thought, well, this is just get me through until I figure out what I want to do.
You decide what you want to be when you grow up.
Yes. So I got the job, come in working morning watch. First night scared me to death. When I was on my own, I trained on day watch, and then I went to nights. And I was working with a girl who come in the same time I did and trained with me on days. And then we were working with another male that night. We come in, and we had to chase right out the get-go. We had mm-hmm. stolen guns. We wasn't quite GCIC certified yet. And, you know, we were relying on this guy to help us through, and it was a scary, scary night. But anyway, once I made it through that night, I realized, you know, I might like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And as time rocked on, it was like something I just grew to love. I, you know, loved who I worked with. I loved the officers on the road. I loved the firemen. I mean, I liked EMS. I mean, I liked everybody. And it was just like we talk about family and how, you know, everybody's there for each other. It's just one big family, and it felt good to be a part of something like that. Still not knowing what I wanted to do for sure, you know, I eventually just fell into my spot, and I've been here 27 years. Haven't looked back, so.
And it went by fast, didn't it?
It really has went by fast. You know, I started on the radio all nights, and then I became a, you know, back then we called it a supervisor. We now call it a team leader. I was a team leader on nights for a while, and then we went to 12-hour shifts, which I hate, still hate today. We rotated nights and days every 3 months. I hated working days. You know, in the beginning, I never thought I wanted to work nights, but then I fell in love nights. So, you know, my likes and dislikes, I went back and forth.
You worked, you worked straight nights for like 8 years, didn't you?
I did, and then went to evening watch for a short time, and I hated evening watch. But, you know, I was also trying to get my degree then. I figured it was time to go back to school, learn a little something. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I ended up on evening watch trying to get my degree. And then we went to 12-hour shifts, rotated every 3 months, nights, days.
Those weren't fun.
I didn't really care for that. But I did. I graduated from Mercer. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. And shortly after that, they created the position of operations manager. And so in 2003, I became operations manager of the 911 center. And I did that for years. And also during that time, I went back to school and got my master's. But it's in education. I always wanted to be a teacher growing up. And I think I thought maybe that there might be a chance of maybe using that degree at some point. But there's not. I don't like kids.
But you... Well, one of the things you left out is you are an instructor, too. So, really, along that time, you had became an instructor for a general instructor with post. So, it was kind of like, oh, maybe you teach in a different aspect. I don't think getting that degree was that we thought we would go back and teach children. Right. I think we thought we'll teach adults.
Well, I mean, I think, but we did early, we did focus on early childhood education when we did our master's degree. And I mean, in my mind, that's always a choice. But after I did that, I decided that was not. I would rather stick with training adults and being on the adult side of things and not dealing with children. So then about 2 years ago, I became director, and that's where I'm at today. So I have big plans for the future of the 911 Center, and I just hope that everything I want to do works out. We get to where I envision the 911 center being. Why did you want to be a dispatcher? I mean, I know it was to come work with me, even though I didn't know you.
Yeah,
it
even was though we went to school together and we didn't even know who each other was. Yeah. Well, I was working. Well, let me back up. When I graduated in 1994, and when I was in high school, I took all these health occupations classes because I wanted to be a nurse. And so, instead of when I graduated enrolling into a 4-year college to become a nurse, I thought, well, I will get certified as a nursing assistant and do that while I go to school and already be in the field. So I went through nursing assistant and I did my clinicals. I ended up getting a job at a nursing home and I worked there for like 3 weeks and I decided that this is not what I want to do. I did not enjoy working in the medical field, and so I quit that job, and I worked at a factory. It was actually J. Williams, where they make checks, business checks. And so I worked there, and that's where I was working when I found out that 911 was hiring. But I was really just at a loss because I thought that, you know, I wanted to be a nurse, and I didn't know what else to do. And I knew that just enrolling in college and not knowing would probably not be good for me. So I found out they were hiring. And I applied just on a whim, and then I ended up getting the job, and that was in 1995. And so I started working, and I had worked nights before because I worked at J. Williams, and I worked nights for a little bit, but when I came to work there, I was on a split shift. And so I went back to nights, and I mean, I didn't mind nights. I enjoyed working nights. And when I started, I worked with Trudy and Christy and Suzanne and Faye was the other people on the shift. And the first night I started was funny because they argued about who was going to train me. And I was thinking to myself, oh, am I not supposed to be here? Do I need to leave? Do I need to call HR because I don't know what I'm supposed to do? And so I thought, oh, do I need to come back tomorrow or what's going on? And then they decided that Christy was going to train me. And so I sat with Christy. And so I was scared of her at first because she had been so vocal about not wanting to train me and not wanting to do all these things. But then when I sat with her and we started the training, I was like, okay, well, she's not as mean as I thought she was. She just didn't want to do it. Well, now we've came a long way because we don't handle things that way. You know who's going to train the person before they start. And so we've learned a lot of things over the years. So I just quickly realized that I had a good group of people on the shift that I was working. And we had a good police department shift that would come and check on us. And we had great deputies that would come and check on us. And I realized this was something bigger than just the morning watch dispatchers that were working. It was part of a big team. And so I worked nights for about 7 years, stayed on the same shift. I remember when Trudy got promoted, I kept thinking, how are we going to make it? Because we can't, our team. Well, before that, Christy left. Christy got married, and she left. And so our team was breaking up, and it was really hard because I thought, how am I going to do this job without them? Because I felt like I could only do the job because I was with them, even though I was able to do the job on my own. But you had working in that type of situation, you work in a lot of stressful moments, and you make these bonds. And it's kind of funny that this podcast, we're calling it Golden Girls, because we called ourselves the Golden Girls, me and Trudy and Christy and Suzanne. And it was kind of nice, but I always remember those, and the times that we had, they still stand out, and these bonds have lasted all this time. We don't get to see Christy as much as we'd like because she has a lot of stuff going on, but we, Trudy and myself and Suzanne, pretty much stay in touch. And so these are friendships that will last a lifetime. So working with them, like I said, Christy left. She got married, and then Trudy became promoted, and I kept thinking, how are we going to make it? But we made it. And then, like Trudy said, we went to 12-hour shifts, which sucked. And it's funny that the director and the operations manager, oh, I haven't said I'm the operations manager. It's funny that we say the 12-hours suck. Well, they still work 12 hours, but that's what they want to work. And so we've talked to them about working modified schedule or trying to come up with something different, and they're not interested. So I didn't want y'all to think that we make them do something we don't want to do. We've tried to talk to them about changing shifts into different type of shifts. So we worked 12 hours, and like Trudy, I didn't like working day shift. I did not enjoy it.
It was early.
It was very early, and it was long. I feel like the nights went by faster.
Days is just those, like, a lot of routine calls, yeah. A lot of escorts, a lot of dealing with the banks, a lot of dealing with, I mean, just, you know, people, keys locked in their cars, just people wake up and they see their mailbox has been knocked over. You know, you just get a lot of low priority, non-action calls. Whereas at night, and something, I mean, not hot. That we want to say, you know, these are
that
the
we hope
calls,
these things happen.
But you got a lot of family fights, you got a lot of arguments, people are going home and people are together. People start drinking. You know, that's usually when the good things.
And when you have a chase or something like that, it's also, you get an adrenaline rush. And you, once it's over, you're just like, okay, I handled that. I did what I was supposed to. And then it's almost like you have that sense of accomplishment, but what's next? What is going to happen next? And so you enjoy, I guess, you almost have to enjoy that feeling, because if not, then if you have, I guess, a lot of anxiety, or if that stresses you out, then I think it would be difficult. But for me, I always liked it. So I think that I enjoy the stressful times. And you have a storm come through, you're putting in the calls, and there's one call after another, and the CAD screen's filled up, and you're just assigning and you're prioritizing the calls. And it's just, when it's done an hour or two later and all the calls are cleared, you're just like, oh, okay, we did all that. We did what we were supposed to. It's over. It's like the calm comes in. Sometimes there's not a calm, because sometimes it keeps going on and on. But
back in the day, there was a calm. Not anymore.
Yeah, now I don't think there's a calm. But back in the day, it was just like, whew, okay, we did that. And just leaving. Yeah, you might have, like, I don't know, some stress, or just feel like, oh, that was a long night. But at the end of the day, for me, it was always like, but we got it done. We did it. Everyone came home. Everyone's going where they need to go. And it was always just nice that you went home and you knew that your police officers and your deputies and your firefighters, they're all going home too in EMS. They're all going home. We all came home today. And that was always, to me, that was how I felt like we accomplished the goal that we were supposed to do. Everyone went home safe. So I worked there for 12 years. We started on 12-hour shifts. I worked, did that for a few years, and then I became a team leader, and I did that for several years, and then I did the CALEA accreditation. Then in 2008, I left 911, and I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I ended up working at the juvenile court, and I worked there for several years, and then I went to the sheriff's office in Eaton County, and I was a deputy and then an investigator for several years. And then I ended up at Georgia Public Safety Training Center, where I was an instructor. And I always joke because I feel like I left 911, but I never really left, because every job, when I was at juvenile, I still talked to the dispatchers. They still, at that point, they got to call and wake me up in the middle of the night to handle a call. When I was at the sheriff's office, they called and woke me up. When I was an investigator, and then I worked on the road, and they dispatched me to calls. When I went to the training center, I didn't have as tight of a bond with them, but I kept in touch with the ones that have been my friends the whole time. And then in 2019, there was opportunity for me to come back, and I came back because I've always felt like 911 is where it all started for me, but it also was always where I felt the most fulfilled in accomplishing the goal for public safety. Yes, the juvenile court was a good position, and I feel like it is part of public safety too. And then obviously being on the road and being an investigator is definitely part of public safety. There's something about being the heart of the whole operation and being able to make sure everyone has what they need and be the link with, in this position that I'm in now, I feel like I can still be the link between the people I worked with at juvenile, the people I worked with at the sheriff's office, the connections that I have with the police department, fire and EMS, and just keep all those together and make sure that we all have everything that we need to get the job done. So it's very fulfilling to me to be here. Like I said, the bonds that we made, they'll last forever. And they have stood the test of time. And if anybody wants to know, for the Golden Girls, I'm Dorothy and Trudy is Blanche. Mm-hmm. Suzanne is Sophia and Christy is Rose. So it's just a little bit of information I have. And if you know me, you know that I am a lot like Dorothy. And I do sometimes say the things that need to be said when some people don't want to hear what they are. And Trudy can tell you why she's Blanche.
Well, I think I'm Blanche just because everybody else fell in the other role, so I just ended up with Blanche.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how it happened.
Oh, okay, yeah. It is. And Suzanne was Sophia because she was the oldest one, and she said that she was going to be an old lady. What did she used to tell us about being an old lady? That when she got old, that she was just going to embrace her old lady and just be an old lady.
And tell us like it is.
Yeah.
And then Suzanne always has a story. Yeah. So, like, picture it, Sicily.
Yes, she does.
So now it's like, picture it, dispatch.
Yes.
And Suzanne can tell a story for sure.
And we'll get her on here to tell one soon. And Christy, we love her, but she's blonde through and through like Rose. Don't hate us, Christy, but it's true.
We had some good times in that little old building.
We did. We went through a lot. And I still feel like the dispatchers we worked with on our shift and the PD shift that we had at the time and the sheriff's office shift at the time. I mean, the fire department changes, but you can look back and think about the ones who were there that worked there during that time, and then EMS, the ones who worked there then. But the police officers and the deputies that we worked with, you just have this stronger bond because they're working all night. You know, the fire department, EMS, they get to sleep if they can. So they're not out just hanging out where we could hang out with the police officers. We could hang out with the deputies, and we used to make food and get them to come up there anytime we had a holiday. And so we just have these strong bonds that I think will be there forever. So why do you want to do this podcast?
So the reason I want to do this podcast is to kind of let the people on the outside know more of what 911 is like. I think people have an idea. And I mean, I know back in the day when we were on the radio, you know, people would call and they were just like, just hang the phone up and get out here. Like they thought we were the ones coming to their house. Well, we're not the ones coming. And I still think some people today kind of feel the same way. You know, it's just like, you know, it might not be you coming, but it's the person sitting next to you. Just, you know what I'm saying? So I just want people to, I mean, kind of understand 911 a little bit more and know, you know, the highs and lows that dispatchers go through. You know, it's a very rewarding job, but it's a very thankless job. Not a lot of people, you know, call to say, I appreciate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the fire department always gets cookies and snacks and people come by to tell them what a good job they do all the time.
Yeah.
You know, now that we share a building with the fire department, you see it more and it's just kind of like, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, and so then now being over at the police department, now that my office is over there with them, you see the same thing. People are bringing cookies and treats, and it's just like, you know, I always knew.
And kids want to meet them because they're heroes to them.
You know, that we didn't get recognized for.
But now you see
for things. But it's just kind of like over the past few years, you know, seeing them bringing in like huge trays of cookies and stuff. And I don't want cookies. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm just saying, you know, you see how people appreciate them and it's because they show up at their house or they show up to the scene. They're the ones that they see. And
but what they're not thinking about when the dispatcher answers the call, it is in the middle of the crisis. It could have just, whether it's a person that's been shot or a family member that just passed out, it's happened right then. It just happened. And so the dispatcher is taking the call and is actually de-escalating the situation before the police and fire and EMS get on the scene. So that's one of the things that I agree with Trudy, that if we could tell the public is that, yes, we don't come to the scene, but there is an important piece. We are a big, important piece of the puzzle.
We're the first person that you have contact with. Mm-hmm. That's why they call us the first responder. We're the first one on the scene. I mean, we're the first one there that's helping someone in their worst moments, you know, the worst situation they could be in. I mean, whatever the reason may be, when you dial 911 or when you call a non-emergency line, you're getting a dispatcher, and that dispatcher is not only helping you through your crisis, your problem, I mean, just whatever your issue may be, they're also getting you the help you need coming at the same time. So they play a dual role, and it's a very stressful role. And I mean, if you can just imagine, you know, say you do take a call and you're talking to an elderly female and her husband is unconscious and you're trying to walk this lady through how to do CPR. Well, first of all, she may or may not have CPR training, but when she's standing there looking at her husband not breathing, you know, you got all the emotions in that and, you know, people are upset and, you know, people just want somebody there. And of course, you're getting people there, but in the meantime, you know, life saving things need to be done. And so the dispatcher's trying to talk to this elderly female and, you know, trying to.
And they just want to get off the phone and get somebody there when the instructions they're giving could help save their life before people are there to actually take over CPR or, you know, start an IV, give them medicine.
So they're playing that dual role and giving those emergency medical instructions and, you know, also trying to keep a person's mind off of, I mean, obviously they're doing CPR, you know, they're in that moment, they know exactly what's going on. But sometimes, you know, talking to somebody and getting them to, you know, put the dogs up and gather medication, and it keeps those people's minds off of, like, it gives them something to focus on. You know, they're not focusing on the dilemma. But
while they're doing all that, they also had to think about who they're sending to the house, like you said, with the dogs, putting the dogs away, because not only are they helping this person, but they're sending the first responders in the field to the house, and they want to make sure whatever is at the house that it's not a threat to them. So it's helping this person and doing all of these other things and looking at the bigger picture.
Right.
So to keep them safe.
So it's that dual role that they're performing. But then they hang up that phone call, but the call's still going on. You know, the EMS gets on the scene, fire gets on the scene, they take over doing CPR, you know, whatever is needed done out there. So we disconnect that line, but the phones are still ringing. Mm-hmm. And that next call you might take is somebody at Kroger that's locked their keys in a vehicle, and they're mad because the officer's not getting out there quick enough to help them, or, and you know, it's just,
or they're mad because it's COVID and they're not locking cars. And the dispatcher is the one that takes the brunt of all that.
But the dispatcher's now dealing with this person that's upset because they're not getting what they want, but yet they just got off this call where, you know, our emotions are there. You know, we mm-hmm. think about, you know, I mean, that could be our grandparents. That could be our mm-hmm. parents. That could be, mm-hmm. I mean,
or their grandmother or grandfather could have passed away in the last few months, or passed away in a similar fashion, you know, years ago.
So the roller coaster ride of serious call versus non-serious call takes a toll. And granted, I think even still today, most of our calls are going to be on the non-serious side. We do have a good bit of serious, but for the most part, you're in that low, you know, people talk to you however they want to.
Mm-hmm. Cuss you out.
But then, you know, when that serious call comes and you have to change gears to handle it, but then you just go back to the lull of taking the non-serious calls. It's emotionally draining.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to educate the public, you know, to kind of let them know that, you know, big calls do happen. Major calls do happen. Calls that affect us happen. Calls that we will think about 10 years later happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
not just 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
Just 25, 27 years.
Yeah, but just because you're not getting immediate service on something that, I mean, I get that your key's locked in your car and you might have an appointment, mm-hmm. and you might need mm-hmm. to be somewhere. But in the grand scheme of things, and what a dispatcher answering those phones deals with,
mm-hmm.
that's not a big deal.
And they can't tell you what other calls we have going on. So they just have to say, we'll get them out there as soon as we can. And that's the thing, is a lot of times once they've called back about their keys being locked in the car and they're mad because no one's there yet and they've been waiting, they've already cuss the dispatcher out. And yes, they do cuss the dispatchers out on the phone. And so they've already cussed them out. And sometimes when the officer or the deputy gets there, they've already let it out. So they don't get that part of it. I'm not saying that they don't ever get it. I'm just saying in this case right here, this scenario, they might have already cussed the dispatcher out. And then the officer pulls up, so they're good now. And so that's one of the things that I don't think that the public understands, that yes, at the time it is an emergency for you, or you thinking it's an emergency, but we have a lot going on. And the other thing is as far as wanting to do a podcast, one of my goals for doing it is, you know, a recruitment effort of, we're short-staffed. So if you think you can answer the call, or you want to learn how to answer the call, come on, we'll train you. We'll teach you how to answer calls. We'll teach you how to dispatch the calls. And we dispatch for all public safety in Newton County, and we're the primary public safety answering point in Newton County, which means we handle all 911 calls. So if you think you can answer the call or you want to learn more about it, then come.
I mean, I also want to share, I mean, just stories, just, you know, the fun times, the funny calls, the, you know, it's not all lows, it's not all highs, but there's a lot of fun that goes into it. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, rewards that go into it. And so, you know, I think people would like to hear kind of what's out there and what, I mean, I know people ask me a lot of questions, so I think maybe this might be a way to help answer some of those questions and, you know, just out there for, hopefully people get a, you know, laugh at, to enjoy and be educated on what we mm-hmm. do.
Yeah, because one of the questions when people find out that you work at 911, they're like, what is the craziest call that you've ever taken? Well, there's not ever just one craziest call. There's a lot of calls that stand out.
I don't think I could share my most craziest call.
I can't either, because it has a lot of cuss words in it.
And
a lot of other things.
Yeah.
We can't share that.
Ooh. Spicy. A lot of vulgar.
Saucy.
Saucy. It was way beyond saucy.
Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions for Trudy or myself, or you want to know more about 911, you can email us at ask911@covington-newton911.com. That's ask911@covington-newton911.com. See you later.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening. It was such a pleasure to come together to produce this episode today. This episode was produced by Jessica Swan, Anessa Westmoreland, and myself, Trudy Henry. The episode was edited by Jessica Swan.
And of course, don't forget to subscribe to Golden Girls 911 Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.